It's time!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports. Welcome back to Pound for Pound. I'm your host for this week, Andrew Crenari, alongside Zach Cordova, Mahdi Dembele. Guys, we're finally coming off of finals. I mean, we're still kind of dealing with them here, a little bit stressful. We're moving our podcast onto Zoom, but with all of that going on, we still have UFC 301 to talk about and a fun fight night this weekend. So before we kind of get into all of that stuff, how are you guys doing?
Doing good, man. I'm all finished with finals now. It's officially summer break. We got 302 coming up in a couple weeks. We have a pretty interesting fight night card this weekend, so gotta say I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing, Mahdi?
Still dealing with finals as of right now. Grades are due Wednesday. Gotta get a couple of stuff in, but I'm over here eating Oreo O's like an idiot and talking pound for pound with you guys, so it's a good day as always.
Yeah, it's always a good day when you get to talk cage on Pound for Pound. And I will say, Zach, you are a lucky person. Me and Mahdi both have finals still. I mean, I have one on Monday, but I'm trying not to worry about it too much with this weekend. Well, we'll see. But anyway, though, Well, let's move into this UFC 301 card. A lot of interesting results. Anthony Smith coming up with a huge upset win over Vitor Petrino. Michel Pereira putting an absolute show on for the crowd. And also Paul Craig kind of getting exposed a little bit in terms of his striking. But I feel like we're going to bury the lead if we don't talk about Jose Aldo's return first. His boxing looked immaculate over three rounds. He gets a unanimous decision win, able to neutralize the really dangerous leg kicks of Jonathan Martinez as well. So I just want your guys' take on how impressive of a performance that was. And is he officially back at bantamweight now?
The King of Rio is back, I think, man. I mean, I think the boxing looked really crisp from Jose Aldo. I think we saw kind of like a rejuvenated version of him, which is kind of what he talked about all fight week of what he was bringing to this event, that this wasn't a one-and-done retirement fight. This was the return of Jose Aldo, and I think we really saw that. And he's definitely, I think, ready to make waves in this bantamweight division. It is a really stacked division at the moment. It's been on fire for the past couple of years, so there's definitely a lot of competition in that top five. But at the same time, I don't see anybody in that top five that I would necessarily say that he couldn't beat. I think that if he were to fight, I think he's already fought Peter Yan. We already saw him, of course, fight Merab in his last fight, and Merab couldn't take him down in that last fight. Merab's taking everybody down. So I don't think that with the top guys in this division, he necessarily struggles too much with. I think we could possibly see another Jose Aldo title run, which would be absolutely insane.
And one thing you forgot to mention, Zach, is that I believe he's 37, 38 years of age, and you're seeing him age like fine wine. Not a rejuvenation, not a comeback story, but him just getting better and better. Yeah. You talked about his boxing and how he looked crisp. I mean, that fight against Jeremy Stephens, who, if you remember Jeremy Stephens, I mean, he goes to decisions, but I knock everybody out that I get in the cage with. I mean, he looked really good against Jeremy Stephens, a guy who's younger than him, who's faster, and who fights extremely well on the front foot. And Jose Aldo was able to best him in that affair, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. You know Jose Aldo because he's like Hannibal Lecter. He hunts for liver shots, and he's just a speedy, quick fighter, but you actually add in some skill on the feet. You're talking about some of the best boxers in the UFC, whether it's Ron Font or Adrian Yanez or Max Holloway. Jose Aldo could easily find himself in company like that. And I think he's here to stay. He's one of my all-time favorite fighters. He's one of all everyone's here's all-time favorite fighters. And Jose Aldo, there's been older guys to do it. And yeah, I easily think that he could be anybody within the top five of the bantamweight division. A stacked division, yes. But we're talking about Jose Aldo here, who just seems to be getting better and better. So, yeah.
Better and better. And at the same time, he does have the big name. So, I wouldn't necessarily say it is out of the cards to get a Jose Aldo fast track to the title. Just especially, well, one, his age. He comes in and say in his next fight, he gets a big finish over a top five guy. Who's going to tell him no? And I mean, who wouldn't want to see him fight against the champ, Sean O'Malley? That'd be pretty interesting to me, especially because Sean O'Malley's kind of pinned as the almost like the next Conor McGregor, this kind of this generation's kind of Conor McGregor, I guess. Definitely not as big, but in the superstar sense, I feel like there are some similarities. So to see that matchup between Sean O'Malley and Jose Aldo go down, I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be a fantastic matchup, just thinking about it now. Because I'm thinking, I mean, you've launched so many other people's careers off the back of Jose Aldo, whether that's a Conor McGregor or a Max Holloway. It really does a lot in the ways of legitimizing a new champion or just a really exciting fighter. I think the same exact thing could be done for Sean O'Malley, or at the very least be a really good test and a really good fight for him. So,
yeah, I agree. And if Merab were to beat Sean O'Malley in this next fight, which is what I assume, and everybody at this point, I think, kind of assumes is what's next for Sean O'Malley, Jose Aldo's fought him already, and it was a pretty close fight. So if we were to see a Merab and Jose Aldo too, I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Not at all. Not at all.
Yeah, so a big moment for the King of Rio, having another in Rio, just a really, really impressive moment. But moving on to this flyweight main event of UFC 301, Alexander Pantoja successfully defends his belt against Astro Boy Steve Urseg. It was a close fight at times. A lot of strikes thrown. Pantoja having that really bad cut above the forehead, making the fight a bit closer than I think he wants it, and really had to kind of grind out a hard decision. So I just wanted your guys' reaction on this fight. Did you think that it was a good fight? Do you think that it was competitive? And I guess post facto, do you think that Urseg, I mean, obviously he didn't get the job done as he would have wanted, but do you think that he, you know, kind of showed himself as a really true contender in this flyweight division?
I will say that. Oh, sorry, I'm going to let Marty go ahead. Go ahead.
I mean, thank you, Zach. I mean, you know what? I was the guy that came on here. I want to say it was last week. Yeah, it was last week, of course. And I said the number 10 guy usually doesn't get a spot unless that you see something special in him. And I just didn't see it. I didn't think that he was the Anderson Silva type, the type of guy that could just come in and, you know, he has star written all over him. And he's just going to be able to make an impact regardless of where he is in the rankings. I apologize to Steve Urseg. He showed composure in the fight when Alexander Pantoja kept walking him down, fighting on the front foot. He was able to get some shots off himself. You see Pantoja with that big gash there, and it kind of made it a closer fight than a lot of people really expected, including me. There's a lot of people saying that he got robbed. I don't think he got robbed. I think Alexander Pantoja, again, fighting championship fights, he was able to go out there and really maintain a victory. But Steve Urseg, I got to give him credit. He hit him with nice shots. I remember the overhand right, and it connected flush on Pantoja's chin, if I'm not mistaken. I want to say that was like in what? I forget the round, but hit him flush. Really, really impressive. Held him with nice leg kicks on the ground. Not on the ground. But yeah, just he looked better than I thought. And I have to give him credit there.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And I think that a lot of the talk has been about this flyweight division and what happens with Figueroa gone, with Moreno gone. A lot of talk I've heard is maybe they get rid of the flyweight division. And I think that these past couple flyweight main events haven't necessarily not delivered. I think they've been good. I think they're fun fights. And Steve Urseg definitely showed up on Saturday to win. He definitely showed up confident that he could be the champ. And I think that's why he brought it to Pantoja. But guys, we gotta hand it to the champ. The guy is always down for a scrap. Pantoja is ready to go through the fire if he has to win a fight, and he's done it over and over and over again. And all three of his last three fights, he's gone through the fire and he's come out on the other side. He just keeps going. He just never seems to run out, and he's just got a lot of heart. So definitely you see why he's the champion there. But Steve Ursig, yeah, was definitely a pleasant surprise. And I think no matter what's next for him, he definitely established himself in the top of that division. I expect his next fight to be in the top five. I think before this fight, he had called out Brandon Moreno. That would be something new. And that would be something I think that is exciting and interests me, besides just seeing, you know, Roy Vall and Moreno just take turns fighting for the title. I think I would like to see a little bit of mix up with some Steve Ursig and putting him in the mix. I think Mokaev is also in the mix there too. So to see Steve Ursig go up in competition level now and see how good he is definitely interesting for me, because he was right there, I feel like, with Pantoja that whole fight. I feel like he may have been in that last round shooting that takedown with, I think, 2 minutes left. May have just cost it in the fight if I think it was that close. So he definitely proved himself, lacked the experience, and maybe that's why he went for that shot so late in the fight when he was being dominated on the ground and he was starting to get the better of the exchanges on the feet. And now he does have that experience, and he is a younger dude. So as we see him now move up in competition with that 5-round experience on his back, I would like to see him work his way back to a title shot, because I do think that he can get back there eventually.
And Zach, just to elaborate before we throw it over to you, Andrew, I'm sorry to jump in, but again, there's a lot of parity at flyweight. You said it, Zach. I mean, outside of Roy Val Moreno, I mean, maybe Kai Kara France, he's ranked number 4. But he ducked a fight not too long ago with Manel Kapp, who's ranked number 7. Outside of really those two guys and Mokaev, who's number 6, I think Ursig is the next guy up. And I believe as of right now, he's ranked number 9. But I mean, like to knock out Matt Schnell like you did, and to show some heart, not just heart, but to show some good stuff in a fight against the champion of the flyweight division, I think that pushes you at least 2 spots up. I would say he's one of the best 7 fighters, maybe 6 fighters in the flyweight division.
Yeah, that championship grit. I definitely think that his next fight needs to be in the top 5. It definitely should be.
100%. It needs to be in the top 5. And he did a lot to, I feel like, impress and kind of validate to audiences that he does deserve to be in that slot. And I kind of agree with you, Zach, that if he didn't go for that takedown in that 5th round, he potentially could have won that fight. Because I feel like, I mean, the commentators were talking about it, and at least I saw it as well, that it was a bit of a toss-up 2-2 heading into that 5th round. But time and time again, that's what we've seen from Pantoja, is that ability to come out and steal really crucial rounds and grind out tough decision wins. And that, I feel like, you know, I guess similar to what you guys have been saying, that's kind of embodied his championship run at flyweight. But going off the back of that, I think that it's clear that they gave Ursig the title shot off the back of that big Matchnell finish. And it seems like they want to incentivize bigger and bigger finishes and grueling fights in flyweight, since it's just purely a lighter weight class. So off the back of that, I mean, I think Ursig is a fantastic addition. And on the road back to the title, I mean, I could even see maybe a Brandon Royval versus Ursig to kind of get him back in contention. Would you guys maybe like that fight?
I think that'd be fun. I think him versus Royval or Brandon Moreno, I think, really interests me. I think those are both stylistic matchups that would produce fireworks. I think those are both a fight night main event. Maybe here down the line, I saw Ursig's post-fight kind of video on his Instagram saying that he wants to fight in Perth. So maybe we get one of those down in Perth. That'd be fun.
Yeah, that would be very, very fun. And also, yeah, Muhammad Mokaev, I feel like, has been just kind of slowly moving up those flyweight rankings too. That could also be a fun fight, especially if you kind of want to check Ursig's grappling up until this point, especially following this fight, since Mokaev is a kind of whiz on the ground.
Definitely, and check Mokaev in terms of the grappling, because we know the champ is kind of a complete fighter. He can do it all. He can go on the ground, he can mix it up on the feet. So getting Mokaev a little bit of test with Usyk on the feet and Usyk test on the ground would definitely be an exciting matchup for figuring out who the next contender is in this division.
Yeah, I will say at the, you know, very least, the next contender has to be someone that is extremely skilled in pretty much all forms of mixed martial arts. They have to be a good striker, good grappler, good clinch work. And obviously that's not anything, you know, too crazy for a championship level fighter. But I feel like Pantoja is just, like you said, I guess, Zach, just proven how good and how well-rounded he is in this flyweight division.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the ability to go five rounds. He's got the gas tank for it. He's had a little bit of problems, I guess, maybe in the later rounds of those fights, but he just seems to keep going. He fights through it. Like, Usyk shoots that takedown, and Pantoja is able to take advantage of it. Even though he seemed like he was gassed out, he was being taken advantage of on the feet, Usyk shoots the takedown, and he immediately knows where to go on the ground, get his spot, and take over that fight and win it. So Pantoja is definitely a complete fighter.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that wrapped up a explosive UFC 301. Very, very fun event. And I will say the Brazil crowd was a bit better. Maybe we could talk about that next week or a little bit later on. But I know that was a big point of contention with 301. And I feel like they definitely delivered, at least compared to last time where they left during Glover Teixeira's retirement speech, which is still embarrassing. But anyway, though, I do want to talk about this UFC fight night this weekend. It should be very fun. We have Chase Hooper fighting, Terrence McKinney, Derek Lewis, Tabathia Richie, which I know Zach is a huge fan of. Quick prediction, because I don't know if we're going to focus on that fight too much since we just have a lot to get through. Who do you think is going to win, Tabathia Richie or Tisha Pennington?
Come on, man. You know Tabitha Richie is going to win that fight. I don't know if I brought it up on here, but I did meet Tabitha Richie during one of my beat reports of Callum Walsh's fight. Callum Walsh's fight here in New York. And I met her, and she actually told me about this fight coming up before it was announced. And I don't know, man. I think every time she fights, she's really impressive with her striking. She has a really high pace. She has really slick boxing. And it, like I said, well, just repeat it. She has really good pace for that division. And it's just in your face pressure all the time. And I think anybody who's not in the top five, that pace is too much for. And I think she definitely makes, she puts on a good performance this weekend. So just a quick analysis of it. But I do think Tabitha Ricci comes out with the win.
Yeah, thank you, Zach, for the quick analysis. No, I appreciate it. I know you're our resident Ricci expert, so I'm glad to ask you. But anyway, though, we do have a lot of exciting fights to talk about. I mean, there's so many ways we could go with this fight night. I feel like it's kind of underrated in terms of how people are looking at it. There's a lot of banger fights in this. But anyway, though, I do want to talk about first Joaquin Buckley. I mean, the king of highlight knockouts, taking on, oh man, this is going to kill me, Nursultan Ruziboev, which is, he's a really, really interesting fighter from Uzbekistan, has kind of put the division on notice with finishes over Cedriques Dumas and Bruno Ferreira. So this is going to be an interesting fight, definitely going to be taking place on the feet and striking. So off the back of that, I mean, do you think that Buckley can come out here and kind of get another big win? Because we were talking before the pod, it seems like it's 50-50 for him. He's found more consistency at welterweight, but who knows? What do you guys think?
I think Buckley's found a home here in the 170-pound division. I said it a couple weeks, well, I guess that was a couple months ago now, during his last fight. Just got to bring it up. I picked him to win that fight, and both of you guys didn't pick him to win that fight. But I believe in Buckley. I think he was undersized in the middleweight, in the middleweight division at 185. And I feel like his reach and his size gave him a lot of problems there because he wasn't able to really find the inside and utilize his power. And at 170, he's more fit for the weight class. He's able to get inside on a lot of these guys. They will get into the reach. And that's what's made him so good, is because Buckley is so powerful. He's such a big dude. They just needs to land one shot, and that's really all you need from him. However, this weekend, his opponent's 6'5", and Buckley's at 5'10". So do we see some of the same problems that we saw him struggle with at middleweight in terms of having trouble getting on the inside, having trouble getting in on his opponent and landing that big shot? He might, just because of the height difference. I'm not sure what the reach difference is. But that height difference is definitely enough to cause a lot of problems.
It's the same. The reach is
interesting,
the same.
Yeah, the reach is exactly the same, which is interesting enough. It makes me think that Buckley's going to use a lot of looping shots, you know?
Definitely.
Wide swing shots. Yeah. Madi, if you want to jump in and give your take. Yeah,
if I can jump in. You know, it's kind of like I see Joaquin Buckley as almost like a Canelo type figure. And what I mean by that is he's not a big guy. 5'10", 170 pounds. Usually that's not a big person, but he packs a punch and that helps him punch up. He could fight bigger guys. So I'm not too concerned about the size, even at a guy 6'5", even considering that the fact that they have the same exact reach. I mean, it's the same arm length. They're going to be able to touch each other up.
But the height difference, that's almost a 7-inch reach or height advantage right there.
That's why I'm going to go with Ruzibov. I think it's going to be a matter of who catches who first, because Ruzibov is quick. He's explosive. He's fast. And he has a crap ton of power behind those punches. He's coming off a very, very good win. I believe it was against Dumas, if I'm not mistaken, which was a very good fight. But if you ask me, it was like 13 total strikes in that, and he just knocked him down round one with 3 minutes to go. I think the same thing could happen here against Joaquin Buckley. I think he just has that power at that size.
I think either way, we definitely get a finish in this fight. In his two fights so far in the UFC, he has two knockouts. Yeah. And he, for someone who's had two fights in the UFC, he has a pretty extensive MMA record at 34-8-2. I believe that's nearing maybe what, almost 50 fights?
Yeah.
So he's got in 20 subs, 20 wins by submission, 12 wins by knockout. He can kind of get it done either way, where maybe Buckley has a little bit more of the a one-way route to victory, which is knockout. Seems like Ruzibov has the advantage both on the ground in terms of submissions. He is mainly a kickboxer, but seems like he could, wherever the fight goes, he can kind of take it. I kind of doubt that this one ends up on the ground unless there is a shot after someone gets hit, someone gets rocked. We usually see that, you know, anyone getting hit hard enough can turn him into a wrestler. But I don't know, man. I think it's a matter of, can Buckley get inside or can Ruzibov keep him outside and just kind of poke away at him until he can land a big shot?
And another thing, he's very, very fluid for a guy his size. 6'5", you expect slow, brooding, looping shots. But the guy can move and he's very active on his feet. He kind of has that Dmitry Bivol type bounce in his orthodox stance. And I mean, like, that power coming out of that right hand, I mean, it's something to marvel at. And again, Zach, like you said, he's dynamic. Wherever the fight goes, he could take it. And when push comes to shove, I think even if this goes to the ground, I think he's going to have Joaquin Buckley beat. You see, usually with guys, when they have this similar fighting styles, it goes the opposite direction. Kamaru Usman, Colby Covington, two great wrestlers, you're going to get a messy stand-up fight. Two guys who could pack a punch like this, if it goes to the ground, I think Ruzibov wins the fight.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that Ruzibov has the edge here, unless if Joaquin manages to kind of catch him cold. I think it's his fight to lose, honestly. And I don't know. I don't know if I'm just kind of a Joaquin Buckley hater at this point. Maybe be able to brand me as that. But I don't know. I just find him really inconsistent. And I hope he proves me wrong, because he's a really exciting fighter and I want to see him be successful. But I don't know. I'm going to remain skeptical up until Saturday night, and we'll see. But moving on, I do want to talk about this heavyweight bout. It should be very, very fun. Derek Lewis coming back, trying to get back on the winning side against Rodrigo Nascimento. Rodrigo Nascimento has been on a heater since 2022, stringing together, I believe, three consecutive wins. And Derek Lewis has been kind of here and there. He either has a big finish over guys like kind of like a Marcos Rogério de Lima, or he'll kind of just get grappled and finished really badly by guys like Jonathan Almeida or like a Sergey Spivak. So he's had some real highs or some real peaks and some real valleys lately in the UFC. So I guess I want to ask you guys, who do you think kind of has the edge in this matchup? And where do you think it mainly takes place? Do you think it's going to be on the feet, on the ground? I mean, very clearly one wants to keep it one way, the other wants to keep it the other. Where do you think it's actually going to happen?
I mean, man, I don't know if there's such thing as logic when talking about a Derrick Lewis fight, because the amount of power that Derrick Lewis has is unreal. Like, he just touches you and you could go down. The question is does he do it? Does he gas out before he does it? Or does he get taken down and get laid on for an entire fight like Giles and Almeida did? So for me, this is really just a classic heavyweight clash of, okay, is Derrick Lewis going to throw something big and Landy's going to run in and throw a flying knee and land it for the hell of it? I don't know. Now, for Nascimento, I feel like the path to victory is a little bit more clear if he wants to take it. This is a main event spot for him, and me and Madi have talked about in the past of it's not about who you beat, or yeah, it's not about who you beat, it's how you beat them. And if you want to make your name known in those heavyweight rankings, you may not just want to lay on Derrick Lewis for the whole fight. Maybe you want to go in there and face the pressure a little bit and try to knock him out, which has seemed like a couple of people have been able to do over the recent time. So if he's down to throw down with Derrick Lewis, this comes down to who lands first. Can Derrick Lewis land a big shot, or Nascimento, who has also proven he has a lot of power, also land a shot? So it's just the heavyweights, man. I feel like heavyweight is just a different sport, honestly, than all these other weight classes, just because of the power. Derrick Lewis is the definition of that. Derrick jiu-jitsu isn't real Lewis, if you guys have ever heard of that.
Just stand up. Zach, I agree full fold. It's like, it's a classic heavyweight clash of styles. I believe if it's a simple formula when it comes to Derrick Lewis. If you survive the first round, you have a pretty good chance of beating him. Again, a lot of logic doesn't go into Derrick Lewis fights. It's everything is just a 50-50. But if there is a formula, you got to survive the first round. I mean, against one of the biggest punchers. I want to say most knockouts in UFC history, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he is right
Black
now.
Beast, of course. Most knockouts in the history of the promotion. I mean, but like, I don't think there's much to Derrick Lewis. I hate to use the word one-dimensional with a guy like that, but it's pretty much all he has. The cardio's dusty. I don't know, the endurance is dusty.
Oh, man, the cardio's rough. This is a 5-round fight. I'm worried.
It's extremely rough for Derrick Lewis. And Nascimento, I got to admit, he looks good in those departments that Derrick Lewis just doesn't. It's just a matter of avoiding the big shots. And if you're able to do that, it's a war of attrition. It's a war of endurance. And I think from then on, he'll be able to take it. Derrick Lewis has to be perfect for a second. Nascimento has to be perfect for the course of 5 rounds, essentially.
Yep. And if it does go 5 rounds, I think that it does favor Nascimento. I believe this is his first 5-round fight, though. So there's a lot to learn about Nascimento in this fight. Derrick Lewis, we know how he is. It just takes one. But sometimes when you get to that 4th or 5th round, he doesn't even have one in him. So it's tough to say. It's more of a question of, does this fight go later, or does it end in the first 2 minutes?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, when you said, Zach, that there's no logic with the Derrick Lewis fight, I was laughing to myself, because you're exactly right. I remember thinking when Derrick Lewis fought Curtis Blaydes, I was like, this is the clearest cut fight of all time. I'm so betting on Curtis Blaydes. I'm taking my money, and you know, I'm gonna be a happy man. Little did I know Derrick Lewis would go out there and uppercut Curtis Blaydes into oblivion. And then after that, I was like, okay, Derrick Lewis has got the stuff. He's the anti-grappling master. And then he proceeds to get out-wrestled and absolutely neutralized by Sergey Spivak. And it was just really embarrassing. And also Jelton Almeida. So me betting on Derrick Lewis every single time, it turns out wrong. I don't know if I'm cursed, but you're right. There is no logic, honestly, sometimes with Derrick Lewis, I feel like. But off the back of that, I feel like I kind of got to go with him. I don't know why. I just think maybe this could just be completely random picking. But I kind of agree with what you guys were saying, where Derrick Lewis only needs to be perfect for a couple seconds. And yes, the cardio is faltering. Yes, the ground game 100% needs some work. But I'm thinking back to Rodrigo Nascimento's only loss in the UFC to Chris Daukaus, funnily enough, due to hooks in like 45 seconds in the first round. And obviously Chris Daukaus has, you know, fallen off a little bit since then. But I think if anybody could kind of replicate what he did, I think it's somebody like a Derek Lewis, who's really known for almost bum rushing people in the first round. And I think it can kind of catch Rodrigo a little off, his game. But off the back of that, I mean, who are you guys going with?
Tough for me to say. Derek Lewis is almost like, kind of like you said, betting on him each time. It's just hard not to. It's almost like it's like horse racing almost. You just have your favorite horse, or you like the name of the horse, or maybe he has a cool your favorite color on his reins. That's just how it feels with Derek Lewis, because there's no method to betting on him. Or picking him, I guess you could say, and saying he's going to win. There's no logic behind it. It's just, hey, Derek Lewis could just walk in there and throw a flying knee in the first 10 minutes or 10 seconds and knock the guy out, or just land some silly uppercut. Derek Lewis discovered that the best defense for a takedown is apparently an uppercut against Curtis Blade. So, man, I could never count him out just because of the incredible power. It's just somebody's got to want to play the game with him if he wants to land. And more times than not, a lot of guys aren't going to stand in that pocket with Derek Lewis. But if Nascimento decides to, I think Derek Lewis wins this fight.
Yeah, pretty much the same sentiments there. I mean, like, again, it's no linear equation when you're talking about Derek Lewis. Does he have it in him? Of course, we've seen it in the past before. I mean, it's just a matter of consistency. Again, if you're going to go with what your heart tells you, if you're predicting, I will go Derek Lewis. Excuse me, if you're predicting Nascimento's, obviously the logical reasoning, because it's much more of a consistent fighter. But if you're going to bet, I mean, you bet on Derek Lewis, and that's not a bad bet at all. So
you bet Derek Lewis by knockout. That's what you do.
By knockout, exactly. By knockout.
No other way to do it. There's no other way to do it. Because Derek Lewis, Lord knows, Derek Lewis is not winning a 5-round decision this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, unless if he's fighting Francis Ngannou, which is still a wild result.
The worst fight. There were 6 fights. Oh, my God. I could think of 30 fights better than that fight.
Anyway, though, we do have one more bit of news to talk about very, very quickly before we wrap up this week's episode. We got to talk about Ryan Garcia testing negative for banned substances in his fight against Devin Haney. He's officially been cleared of any PED use. And apparently the substance they tested positive for, Ostarine, it was like 1/1,000,000.
It was a super small.
Yeah, exactly. It was an extremely small amount. So off the back of that, I mean, we saw, I'm sure you guys saw his tweets, like vindicating himself, and also, you know, poking jabs at guys like Conor McGregor, who was kind of talking about this and the whole controversy and news coming out of it. But what do you guys think? I mean, did you ever think that he was doing it when the news came out, or did you fully deny it? I know we kind of gave your takes last week, but just give me general takes on this kind of vindication.
No, I didn't think Ryan was ever doping. I didn't. It was sketched to me from the moment it came out over 2 weeks after the fight. And I think Devin and his team are still trying very hard to get this one overturned, because Devin is up at night not being able to sleep because of that loss on his record. Well, the reality is he lost to Ryan Garcia. I think Mahdi told me yesterday he's looking over at that belt because he is still the champion, and he's realizing that it's not his belt. Even though, you know, Ryan didn't make weight, blah, blah, blah. Ryan went in there and beat him. And beat him up badly. So I think this is one where Devin Haney is just kind of trying to find a way to sleep at night, I almost feel like, trying to get this fight overturned, which it just seems a little sketchy to me that the drug test came out so long after the fight. But at the same time, I don't think Ryan Garcia has ever used steroids in any of his fights. He openly admitted to even drinking the day of the fight. So if Dev's looking for an excuse, there isn't one. I mean, apparently Ryan Garcia was out at a bar before the fight. So.
I mean, yeah, Zach, much of the same sentiments. I, again, when we talked about this last week, the overall sentiment that we all shared was no. Obviously, Ryan Garcia didn't do that. One, because of his fighting heart. I don't think he gets enough credit for that. Again, I mean, Ryan Garcia, he really, really pushes he pushes the sport forward. You just saw that he called out Errol Spence. I don't know how well that'll go for you, but Errol Spence is not an easy fight. That's the beauty of it. That's why we love boxing. And that's why I appreciate guys like Ryan Garcia and even a Devin Haney for that fact, even if this came from Devin Haney's camp, because Devin doesn't understand why he lost, because he has an Apollo Creed heart as well. It's a Rocky level heart. Like, I remember stories about Tommy Hearns and Marvin Hagler when they fought. When Tommy Hearns lost, I mean, like, he was blaming everything. He was blaming on the massage that Emmanuel Stewart gave him before the fight. Like, great fighters don't understand why they lost. It's not in their vocabulary. Like, they just don't comprehend it. They can't compartmentalize, because they're such great fighters with such great hearts. Again, like I said, Ryan Garcia was drinking and smoking all up into this point. There was even allegations of him doing cocaine. I think if he was doing, like, John Jones pictogram levels of ostracin, he would probably come out and say it. I don't think he did, which is obviously the case now. And if Devin Haney's...
Sorry to cut you off there, Mahdi, but I think that's all the time we have today for this installment of Pound for Pound. Make sure to check out the UFC fights this Saturday. And as always, a huge thanks to my co-hosts, Mahdi Dembele and Zach Cordova. I've been Andrew Canary, and Pound for Pound is a production of WFUV Sports. Have a great weekend.